So I am so glad to be with you all this morning. I had such a wonderful welcome when I came in. Everyone said, "Welcome back." And I'm like, "Have I been here before?" I think what I must have happened is I think I was with you all online in the last few years. And so I was with you, but I was also in my bedroom. And you were also in all of the spaces that you needed to be in at that time. And now I'm just really glad to be out here in your space and to be with you this morning. And so I want to thank you again for your hospitality, inviting me here. Do you want to stay up here? You can sit in there if you
Oh,
want to.
okay.
Whatever works for you. There you go. And I know it's a special day today as well because we all had to deal with our time change morning. And I know sometimes that leads to some a certain disjoint throughout the day for those of us who are noticing that the light has changed. Whatever we're used to in the mornings is not quite what we're seeing. And some of us who aren't with our phones all the time may even be late or early. That could happen because of the way the clocks are working. So thank you for coming out today and being here. I have another reading that I wanted to share with you this morning, a little bit similar to the one we just read together from my colleague, the Reverend Bill Schultz. Does anyone else know Reverend Bill Schultz? You encountered him a little bit? Yes. And he has another reading from our hymnal that goes like this. This is the mission of our faith, to teach the fragile art of hospitality, to revere both the critical mind and the generous heart, to prove that diversity need not mean divisiveness, and to witness to all that we must hold the whole world in our hands. I really appreciate this very brief reading, the way each of those words kind of compasses a great deal more than what it's really saying. Talking about mission and faith, about hospitality and our critical minds and our generous hearts. And I'll be speaking about that a little bit later this morning. I appreciate that he foresaw that we might experience our diversities as division, that we might forget or lose sight of the fact that in times like these, times when global events and incidents so close to home in our own precious lives cause us to forget that we hold the whole world in our hands. And that we hold it for each other this morning again. The activist and scholar M. Jackie Alexander told us we cannot afford to cease yearning for one another's company. We cannot afford to cease yearning for one another's company. But I think I've been forgetting that. My spiritual family, I think that yearning has been harder to come by recently. I could tell it was a little distant for me on Tuesday night, Halloween, when I found myself reluctant to really get out there and enjoy the holiday. And Halloween has always been one of my favorite holidays. It is such a beautiful, topsy-turvy experience, right? And I even still have young children. My youngest son, Benjamin, is 8. And he put on a black cat costume, which I have to say, I've had a child in that costume for over 10 years now. It is amazing. It's really cute. Always there for us. Excuse me. So that was a wonderful return. But I don't know. It's just I just wasn't feeling it this Tuesday, and I think it might be because of this pandemic situation that is now in the rearview mirror for many of us, but still kind of part of our lives in this other way. And in the earlier stages of the pandemic, we really gave up Halloween. We set aside all of that doorbell ringing and costumes and crowded sidewalks, that the improbably generous redistribution of all of the candy. And instead, we really kept each other safe by staying apart. And maybe it's still kind of that residual fear, like, oh, is this still safe? Is this okay? Is this something we can do? But then, I got over the threshold. Got my kids where they needed to be and got out there and we were back. Did anyone else has is trick-or-treating part of people's lives? Back in the streets a little bit? All right, not too many, but a little bit. It's all good. So we were back. And so my neighborhood, I live in a multifamily neighborhood. And so the houses there, we don't really do trick-or-treating. It's like too complicated. And so we actually, we're imported into another neighborhood just a few streets over, which is crazy. It's so crowded. I saw a lot of Pokemon costumes out there. I saw a couple of Barbie. I thought I would see more Barbie, not that many Barbie, a lot of Mario. And then I saw my personal favorite was a grown-up in a giant axolotl costume. Anyone? Axolotl? It was like one of the like blow-up ones. And axolotls, for those who aren't familiar, it's kind of Mexican salamander. Very rare, but now very present. It had these fluffy external gills. And then I watched this person's in a giant costume, and like this little child came up and like offered them candy. And then their little, it was like a Tyrannosaurus Rex. It was like, I can't take your candy because its hands didn't work. But it all worked out. But it was a really sweet moment. So there I was. I crossed over that threshold of uncertainty and discomfort. We were trying this again. I arrived at that further shore, and I realized I actually love being in the company of these strangers who are neighbors. I love that we were practicing all of those moves and steps, guest and host, house by house, this one night of the year when all the yards and all the sidewalks belong to all of us who are currently caring for younger children. Those closed and locked doors suddenly open in pools of light, and we have permission to get close, to actually peer inside and to imagine other lives. And to sweeten the deal, we receive gifts with very impressive names, like 100 grand, with very awesome names like Milky Way and Dove and Starburst, with salvific names like Lifesavers. There's a poetry to the trick-or-treats. You might have missed it, but I think it's there. This year, I found myself chatting more in each open doorway because I was recognizing new faces. My oldest daughter is 14, so she just started at Santa Monica High School. And that's opened up a lot of new connections to my neighbors. My husband also just started singing with the community choir at Santa Monica College. And he, too, suddenly recognized new faces at the door. Turned out they weren't strangers after all. When we got a little closer, when we practiced that fragile art of hospitality, what would it be like if we did this not just one night a year, but wove it into all of our habits of mind, of heart, of body? I wonder what trick-or-treating is like in Nellie and Bartholomew's neighborhood, with that generous friendship that was shared in their story, a kind of neighborliness that seems a little distant to me in this crowded city with so many strangers, but a beautiful reminder of the possibilities of connection, of what kind of generous heart will see the treasures that are found on an ordinary walk through the neighborhood, the nice dogs and the nasty ones, the bumpy sidewalks and the everyday adventure of the sprinklers. It is, after all, an act that strengthens fragile hospitality when we say to someone who is in the hospital, I miss you. When we write to that person, when we offer help only when it's really needed, with that sense of mutuality, it's kind of like a trade. I hope there are some kinds of friends in your life right now that know you well enough to talk when it's time to talk, but also to enjoy being quiet together. I hope you have friends like that who never cease to yearn for your company. What would it be like? What would it be like to live like this always, not as strangers so suspicious of what we have yet to understand? Not as people afraid of the depth of one another's need, but as neighbors and kin with open doorways, with hands outstretched, not empty but open, with our arms raised only in greeting, never in war, as the poets tell us. The price we pay when we tire of one another's companionship is steep. My spiritual family, many years ago, I worked at a nonprofit farm in Massachusetts, and I always have to say that I worked in the office, did not work in the fields, although they did let us out a few times a year to dig potatoes and to plant corn and to harvest the beets, which you can harvest very late in the year. Do you know why you can harvest them so late in the year? Any urban gardeners among us? they actually get sweeter in the ground with the frost. They get sweeter in the ground. But then also the deer get them, so it's like you have to decide whether you want sweet beets or beets that you don't have to share. So Greg Gale was one of my colleagues in that job, and he taught me in my office job to make agendas for my meetings and to always write at the top of my agenda the goals of the meeting. I don't know if anyone here is doing any committee work where you have agendas and you set goals for your meetings. And from that time, many years ago to this, whenever I am leading a meeting and I do need to write an agenda, I will put down our goals on the list. You know, we're going to review the holiday event calendar, or we're going to decide on the date for the fundraising gala. But then I usually add that we're going to get to know each other better. It is literally my hidden agenda in every meeting that I've ever been a part of. I don't know if Greg taught that to me or if I just decided that that is always a task that is on my mind when I gather, that one of our tasks in human community is to get to know one another better. I wonder if this is one of the goals of this community as well. And in the ministry we offer to one another when we get to know one another better, I'm inspired by another one of our colleagues, the Reverend Carlton Elliott Smith, who serves the Pacific Western region now, who once said that his call to ministry was to delight in the presence of others. Me too, Carlton. How did you know? I'm not saying it's easy to delight in one another. I'm not saying it's easy to get to know one another better. We might have to see one another as fully human, as fully complicated, as fully mysterious. Fully human, I'm not sure I'm ready to be fully human in traffic. I'm not sure I'm fully ready to be human in the pickup line at school. There's a lot of very irritating behavior that takes place there. I'm not going to name any names, Stephanie. The grocery store checkout. But I will argue and I will maintain and I will assert that it is easier for me to delight in you. It is easier for me to see you in that open doorway if I have tried to know you better. And how will I know you if I am afraid and you are afraid and harm is the only language we have been taught to speak easily? What would it be like to live so safely, to live in the presence of the kind of active peace that makes it possible to yearn for one another's company, strengthened by what the poets called secure interiors of heart and home and land, so firm as to make secure borders irrelevant at last? In those days, my critical mind will be less alarmed, less afraid, and less lost. Even as I keep myself safe and dodge your dangerous hurry on the highway, even as I continue to judge your loose interpretation of the parking rules at school, even as I freeze because there is nothing I can say about Israel, nothing I can say about Palestine that could possibly contain the weight of grief and rage and despair that so many of us feel for that ever-widening extent of our human family. It is so hard in these times to witness that trouble, the trouble in my human family that we sum up as the Middle East, which I'm honestly not going to go more into here, except to tell you that I will never, 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 never give up on hope for peace. There's a song leader who has inspired me to be clear about this. Her name is Debbie Nargi Brown, and I'm going to quote her song, and I'm sorry, it's going to bring up a little bit for me, but you all are singers. You know how it is. In this generous, generative language of music, she says, quoting Emily Dickinson, "Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in your soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all." And she tells us, in this beautiful language of music, she says, Never, never, never. Never, never, never. Never, 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 never give up on hope. Never, never, never. Never, never, never. Never, 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 never give up on hope. Never. I think there's a word for what I feel right now, a word that I wasn't familiar with until I started working at St. Joseph Center, which provides a wide variety of social services to people who are experiencing homelessness in Venice and actually across LA County. And I met an outreach worker there. Her name is Kate. She does amazing work, and she does direct service work. Again, want to emphasize, I work in the office. And she works with a lot of people who have given up on hope. Too many hardships, too many broken promises, too long a road to walk, too heavy a load to carry. And when Kate works with people who are facing these kinds of hard times, she says, I will be your hope holder. I will hold on to hope for you until you can hold it yourself again. I think this could be the mission of our faith, to hold hope for one another, to hold it and the whole world in our hands. To me, this kind of hope holding is its own generosity in times like these. Not the generosity I usually speak of, that love of the human that moves so many of us to share what we have to give with our communities and congregations, the generosity of solidarity and kinship and neighborliness, the way that we come together in congregations like this one and share what we have and offer it to one another. I'm talking instead about the generous heart, the one that is here to learn your story, that is here to share some of mine, and to hold hope for you when hope is hard to find. The generous heart that keeps us connected across our differences, that spans the truth of the distance between our critical minds who guard our hard-won positions. A generous heart that holds our complicated human family and the web of life in an ever-widening embrace. I say this, and I know you join me in condemning and rejecting the violence of terrorism, of bigotry, of hatred. I say this, and I know you join me in saying that we will not turn away from the unspeakable and non-innocent cruelties our human family is inflicting on one another. And yet every day there is a revelation of thoughtful people with critical minds and generous hearts who are family to Israel, who are family to Palestine and Gaza, who are trying to see us all, trying to help us see one another always as part of a human family. We simply cannot afford not to see it. We can't afford not to get to know one another better. We can't afford not to embody the kind of active peace that keeps us truly safe, to yearn for secure interiors of heart and home and land so firm as to make secure borders irrelevant at last. For some of us in this time, that means witnessing for justice and peace in the Middle East. It means protesting and advocating for the end of terrorism and violence and occupation there and the whole world round. It means working for the safety of shared peace and prosperity for everyone in our human family. For some of us, it means gathering in community to grieve all that we have lost, to find a measure of peace, just enough peace for today, in our collective lamentation and in holding hope for one another, even here. Even now. My spiritual family, these are challenging times. We must remember that we hold the world in our hands, that we hold it for and with one another. If you are in pain, if you are angry and in despair, you are not alone. It will not always be this way. If today finds you in the presence of your joy and peace and power, please hold the hope for those of us who are not able to carry it right now. We need you to hold it and the whole world in your open hands. May we be the ones to make it so.